All right. It is just past 4 o'clock here on this lovely Monday, August 5th, which means it's time to welcome my regular guest, Chris Carey. Having Chris on is always a joy, but I especially get happy when he brings in a record that I love so much that I still probably listen to it, no lie, all the way through at least once a month. And for whatever reason, I don't know why, but I have 2 copies of this record on vinyl. Pat Benatar's debut, In the Heat of the Night. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Ah, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this album came out in August of 1979, so it's 40 years old this month. Pat Benatar was born Patricia May Andreski in 1953 in Brooklyn. And so, and she grew up in Brooklyn. She was interested in singing in theater as young as grade school. And she got voice lessons and studied classically quite a bit. And she was going to try to attend the Juilliard, but then didn't. I think she got talked into going to some sort of healthcare thing from her parents. And she did that for 1 year and then dropped out, married her high school sweetheart, Dennis Benatar. And for several years, she worked as a bank teller during the day and a singing waitress by night, and then eventually started doing gigs in and around town. In 75, when she was playing at some sort of amateur night at Catch a Rising Star, Rick Newman, who owned those, they were comedy clubs, so they were mostly comedy clubs, but they did have some singing nights. And Rick Newman, who was the manager of these Catch a Rising Star clubs in town, ended up signing her, he didn't sign her, but he became her manager. And within another couple of years, she was signed to Chrysalis Records, and she was 25. So, by 70 standards, she'd already been doing it quite a bit and had quite a bit of practice singing out and about in New York. When they recorded her first record in June, July of 79 at a small kind of unknown studio called Whitney Studios in Glendale. I mean, it wasn't a no-name studio, but it wasn't a huge studio,
right,
that cost a lot of money to book time in. She was assigned Mike Chapman as producer. He's kind of a cool 70s producer. He worked with The Sweet and Susie Quattro and Blondie and the Knack.
Yeah, he did lots of cool stuff.
He was also in an early 70s UK kind of glam slash soft rock band called Smokey. But he only really produced about 3 tracks of it, and the engineer, Pete Coleman, ended up, you know, producing the rest
producing
of the album.
Producing by default.
I think he was, I don't know whether Chapman wasn't that interested or was double booked or whatever, but you know, this was a new kind of unknown artist, so I don't think, you know, there was, I think Pat Benatar was pretty happy just to get what she could. And as a matter of fact, 2 of Mike Chapman's songs when he was in Smokey were covered on this album. And there's actually several covers on this album. She covered John Cougar Mellencamp's I Need a Lover, which is interesting because that album came out, the album that single was on for John Cougar.
Wasn't it later?
No, it came out like a month before this.
Oh, no.
And so what's weird is
that's wacky.
It is kind of weird. And the only thing I can figure out is that I don't think it became a hit until in 1980
yeah,
for
because,
John Cougar.
Yeah, I feel like I remember hearing about that becoming a hit later, and that's why.
It was not that much later, and so I don't know whether,
the proximity is odd.
It is odd, but it's a pretty good cover nonetheless.
Yeah.
Then she did a cover by Nick Gilder, who's known for Hot Child in the City, and like I said, Smokey, an Alan Parsons Project cover, and a cover by Sweet, too. And Sweet, who probably have one of the best 70 songs of all time, Fox on the Run, which is a pretty darn good song. Anyway, I like Sweet. But commercially, so this thing was released and it almost immediately was a hit. It ended up on the Billboard 200 on its debut. It peaked at number 12. The first single, which is If You Think How to Love Me, was released and it kind of nothing happened. And then after that, they released Heartbreaker and We Live for Love. And I'm convinced, actually, that if they would have released If You Think You Know How to Love Me, if they'd released that third, that probably would have been a hit, too.
Yeah.
But they didn't release that way. And I kind of think they probably released it that way because Mike Chapman, who, was producing this in sort of, and it was a Smokey cover that he was in. It was a hit in the UK and Europe. And so my guess is probably the record execs were like, hey, that was a hit in the UK and Europe. It probably can be a hit again, but it wasn't. I think it could have been if it was released third after Heartbreaker.
Yeah. When did We Live for Love come into play?
That was the second single.
Yeah, the second one.
Or I'm sorry, there was a third. There was a third because Heartbreaker was the second release.
And We Live for Love is the one that I remember hearing first and being completely convinced that that was a new Blondie song.
Yeah, it was very Blondie. And that was, you know, and that was kind of what was cool at the time is because I think that in many ways what Blondie and Pat Benatar did in 78 and 79 is kind of what set the pace for pop music and female-driven pop music in the 1980s, which was mostly pop with a little bit of rock and a little bit of new wave kind of infused in it. And We Live for Love is probably the most new wave song on the album.
And I see a fair amount of punk both sonically and aesthetically in a lot of what Pat Benatar does. I see, you know, I see a little polystyrene in there. I see a little bit of punk rock in Pat Benatar, and I was always really, really drawn to that. Certainly it's melodic enough and structurally to be called pop, no doubt, but I see some punk rock in there as well.
Yeah, and actually We Live for Love, which is kind of cool. That was that song. I mean, Pat Benatar, she only was co-writer on a couple of songs on the album, but We Live for Love was written by Neil Gerardo, which at the time was just her lead guitarist, but ended up being her lead man.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, they've been married since I think like 82, so they've been married almost 40 years.
Yeah.
But he ended up, you know, not only did he play lead guitar in this and write that song, he ended up producing quite a few records for Pat Benatar, and he's worked with different artists all through the years, like Rick Springfield and Kenny Loggins and Beth Hart and several other artists. So he's kind of notable on this too. But yeah, it's a great record, and I think it's kind of a neat intro into kind of what Pat Benatar became. And she, you know, she was like, I mean, she was pretty iconic, especially in the 80s, and she became, you know, with her later releases, became kind of a feminist, I think, you know, icon. And
certainly was for this DJ.
Yeah, I think
I loved me some Pat Benatar. I still do.
Well, yeah, and I think that, you know, and it came on a couple albums later, but, you know, that she had some singles that I think, you know, everybody identified with, and or at least all my, you know, my friends and my female compatriots that I knew growing up, everybody loved Pat Benatar.
Yeah,
and
for
so,
sure.
And she did, I mean, you know, even though some of her songs are pretty simply constructed as far as, you know, as far as lyrics go, but vocally they're pretty amazing. She could go from like angelical high voices to these like snarls and nothing flat.
Well, it's funny, and I know she was self-conscious about that initially. She was drawn to harder rock, but she felt like initially what she, I think this is kind of funny that she described herself this way. She said, I sounded like Julie Andrews trying to sing rock.
Well, and I think, you know, and there's actually...
because like, it's such operatic tendencies in that range, in that soprano. And,
well, and I know, you know, even from knowing my wife, who she grew up being trained to sing, you know, in musicals and stuff. And once you get used to singing that way, I think it's really hard to untrain yourself that way.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of people that are trained classically who can, you know, technically sing anything, but have a hard, they kind of have to learn how to sing something that's not opera or musical.
Right. Or they just go into heavy metal.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Then you confront darkness.
Yeah, exactly. Or yeah. Juice Priest.
Yeah.
Right on. Okay, anything else to add before we get into your first selection?
Nothing. I think that I wanted to play the track 3, If You Think You Know How to Love Me, because I think that's a really good song that I really do think if it was probably released as the third single, it probably would have been on the top 40 as well.
Indeed. I'm talking with Chris Carey about Pat Benatar's In the Heat of the Night. Came out right around this time back in 1979. It is our classic pick of the week, and we'll be featuring a song from Pat Benatar's debut every day at 4 o'clock for the rest of the week, starting off with the album's first single, If You Think You Know How to Love Me. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.